We all wish we could talk to animals. As it turns out, we can. Animal Connections with Laura Rowley explores the nature of interspecies communication. What are our animals trying to tell us? Animals commune through love, a force that opens all doors. Listening to them teaches us how to be better humans. Why? We can trust them to tell us the deepest truth about who we are and how one can grow into a more powerful version of self. Laura shares over 20 years of stories and wisdom learned from her work as an animal communicator in this hard and thought-provoking show.
Welcome. I'm Laura Rowley. You can listen to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Friday at 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen online or on your mobile devices. To learn more and for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is the media partner for Omega Institute. Thank you for joining me today. We have a lovely lineup. We're going to be talking and sharing stories about our animal companions, as we always do on this radio show. But we always do it with a slant as to why we have animals in our lives, what animals do for us, why we're interested in animals, what they teach us, how they make us feel, and how that deep connectedness can be life-altering in a really positive and wonderful way. So one of the topics we're going to explore today is the idea of our animal companions being like a personal growth opportunity for us. This is something I've touched on frequently in all the last episodes that you can see in the archives and look at in the podcast library and listen to them again if you'd like, because I find in my work as an animal communicator and a workshop facilitator, I'm teaching people how to use their intuition and to look at different things in our lives that repeat almost like a pattern or an overlay on our life where we start to become interested in them. Because our animals share our lives so intimately, our dogs, our cats, our horses, your turtle, whatever your animal is, if you love them, you're sending love to them, they're sending love back to you, and through that vibe, through that deep connection, is created kind of a whole thoroughfare, a whole throughway, a thought process that goes back and forth, and it gets you wondering sometimes maybe what they're wondering, or it gets you wondering why they are doing some behavior. So frequently when people phone me, they call my secretary, contact me through laurarowleyhealer.com. That's my website. And they ask for a private appointment because they have some questions. They have doubts. They have fears. They want to chat about it with their animal. So most of those conversations start out with the individual saying to me, well, why does my dog or my cat do X, a certain thing? Why does he do this or that? So, for instance, it might be, why does my dog pee on my carpet in the living room? Why does my cat run out the door even when I ask him to stay inside when it's dark out and I'm afraid he'll get hurt out in the dark by other animals? Why won't my dog get in the car with me? Is he car sick or does he just hate going with me? How come my dog is friendly with my daughter but doesn't seem to really be happy when my son comes home? And the list can go on and on and on, where people are just fascinated. I mean, other things can be more obvious, like why is my dog limping, or, you know, my cat vomiting, or can you tell me where something hurts? Like, for instance, sometimes with veterinary medicine, it might be difficult to actually know where the problem lies. So people will just call and say, can you let me know what hurts so that I can tell the vet? It seems like maybe their right front foot hurt, so that they could perhaps start some diagnostics in the right department instead of guessing and doing a lot of extra x-rays. They maybe want to just look at the foot first to see if that tells the story, at least run it by the veterinarian so they can make the educated decision about the medical diagnostic test that would be best. So all of those things end up getting wrapped into kind of a process, I've noticed, after 22 years of doing these readings with people. I do it full-time for a living, or else I teach workshops. I do one or the other. And I started to see a pattern that, first, I felt obligated when I initially started. I would try to ask the animal, can you show me what part in your body hurts? Can you tell me what you're feeling when you wag your tail for the daughter but not for the son? So they would tell me a story through pictures, and I would do my best to relay that story to the person I phoned, and they would ask questions back. So this give and take started to happen where everyone started to learn more about each other, and hopefully my goal is always to have the conclusive few moments be where people understand their animals better or their own feelings better. So I started to see, though, that some people become very interested in a certain topic about their animals, like perhaps riding in the car. Why doesn't he want to get in the car? Does it look like he's happy once he's in the car? He lays down on the floor when he's in the car. He puts his tail between his legs when I open the car door. You know, they got maybe obsessed a little, like, what is going on with the car? So I noticed that this is kind of a process that starts to happen, which gets created every time you pay attention to anything in your life with some sort of real focus or intention. Whenever we do that, I believe that we have an internal guidance system, and I also believe that we have spiritual guides who help us become interested in something because there is a richness there that if we explore it, we might actually really learn something about our world and our place in the world. So it might be that you're interested in your plants in your garden. That's another perhaps place where you become very interested. You start to explore it and you start to understand the nature of growing and healing maybe. But for people that are animal folks, the animals tend to be that kind of a pivot point where our focus gets driven inwards to the pivot point, maybe on where we love the animal, we're interested in their well-being. So that drives us to think, well, I wonder what's wrong there, or I wonder what's up there, or I wonder, is he trying to tell me something? So my life as an animal communicator is always interesting because I'm working through these developments with people while they try to understand themselves. And often they already kind of got the message and they just want to hash it out with me or hash it out with the animal to maybe make the animal more comfortable or understand it more deeply or get a little confirmation from me, like, am I making this up or is this really what's happening? So I always tell people that this process you start when you start to become intensely interested in something because we love it and we want the best for it, it involves becoming sort of in tune with your world on a different level. And it's super important. I mean, it cannot be underestimated that you honor that desire. Act on it if you want to, of course, but at least honor it. Say to yourself, well, it's important that I'm wondering about this thing because I feel that spirit, the life force that surrounds us all, is always trying to get our attention. And I choose to believe that it's always trying to get our attention so that we can improve our connection with it. And animals are so full of spirit, soulful eyes that we are drawn to them because we see, this is almost like our animal's almost like a portal into the unknown, into the spirit world, into, well, nothing creepy, but that part of ourselves that's alive. Like, what does it mean to be alive? They seem to really embrace it. And humans sometimes can be a little backwards in how we embrace it because we carry a lot more baggage around than animals do. They're freer of all that. So when we live with them and of them, we start to rub off on them, they start to rub off on us, and a beautiful process starts to happen. So I always tell people the first step is to become in tune and honor your desire to wonder about more. And then maybe the next step might be something like it's problem solving and you're not going to know the outcome necessarily. If you start to say, why is my dog, for instance, not riding in the car gracefully or not seemingly happy to do that, you don't really know if you're going to come up with the answer. But if you start to allow yourself and your right brain and your intuitive side to contemplate different creative solutions to this idea, you maybe can make the dog more happy about going in the car with you. Like maybe he's car sick and you can figure it out. Lots of times people just use me to do that, but certainly you can do that on your own. You don't need me to be intuitive or creative. So one of the first things to do is ask yourself, what's being shown to me? Look for patterns. Repeated patterns. Are you going someplace in particular when you get the car out? Are you doing it in a routine way? Do you have a certain mental attitude or level of emotion that you should be paying attention to? Explore your emotions because your animals always pick up on them. That is the language that they find in us so that they can understand us. They look for how we're feeling to decide how it rubs off on them and whether or not they want to do it. So if, for instance, you're getting the car out to go to a job you hate before you ask your dog to go with you because you're going to maybe drop him off at the doggy daycare center, and you think, well, I'm taking him to the doggy daycare center. This ought to be fun. Why isn't he looking fun? Why isn't he looking happy? Well, maybe you're miserable because you're going to your job. And you're showing this like, oh, here we go again, my job. Oh, I better hurry. I'm late. Oh, my gosh. And you're all anxious about getting there on time. And you're hustling the dog. Get in the car. Get in the car. We've got to go. Come on, come on, come on. You're holding your coffee, your briefcase. You're rushing. Maybe, in other words, it's not really about them. Maybe they just feel bad for you. And so you have to start to just be really open to how does this feel? How do I feel? What's going on there at another level? We don't really have very many opportunities in our daily life to pause and really examine the underlayer of things. What effort we're putting into something, what emotion we're putting into our daily lives, into our jobs, into our routines, is something that animals that live with you or that participate in a sport with you are completely 100% aware of. They're interested and they start to mimic them. And they start to tell us a lot about ourselves and how we're approaching life if we start to pay attention to these patterns. It's super cool when you start to see that, because they're also not judging us. They're just being objective. Like, this is how you're showing up. You seem unhappy about getting in your own car. Now you want me to leap in here and pretend we're happy? And then, you know, I don't think so. That might be one possible reading in that particular example. There are countless, a myriad examples of this sort of behavior that teaches us a little bit about, well, what is this looking like for me? And ask yourself, do you like seeing yourself that way? You know, I am kind of bummed when I drive to work every morning now that I think about it. Is that a pretty way to live my life? Or is that a way to live my life that perhaps needs a little looking at, a little correction? Maybe I need to get a happier job, get a different career, get a better attitude, think about what's bothering me at work and solve my problems with maybe other people that I work with, or the nature of how I'm approaching my life in general. So when you say to yourself, this isn't too pretty through the dog's eyes, I guess it's not too pretty through mine, you know, don't I deserve happiness? I guarantee you, if you changed your attitude about your job, the dog would start to get different about going in the car in that particular example. Sometimes they're just car sick or something simple, but most things are not that simple or you wouldn't be interested in it. If you're interested in it, it's important. And then we learn, as we're doing this process, to trust ourselves a little bit more. We start to go, I'm getting a little bit of a handle on my life here. This is very amazing. One gentleman that I worked with in the last couple months, I always change the names of the people and the animals I work with because, it just keeps it private and confidential, which is how I handle each case confidentially. And so this gentleman, Mark, had a dog named Goliath. Mark was a very athletic man, loved outdoor sports, got the dog Goliath because Goliath was, as you can imagine, a large, athletic kind of a mutt who loved to play and run, and he took him trail running and riding all the time, and they had a really active, mountainy kind of life when Goliath suddenly started to limp, and then the limp went from a kind of a little sore at the end of a run to barely able to start running and didn't even seem to want to go down the trails. So the veterinarians couldn't at first find anything wrong, and then eventually it appeared that Goliath had some sort of encapsulated infection in his leg, which needed to be treated. Probably maybe a thorn, something had worked its way into his paw and gotten up through the bottom of his foot. And they finally figured out what it was. It was sort of subtle at first, and it grew worse. So they did all kinds of procedures to Goliath to fix him. It was Mark's belief that he and this dog loved their lives as outdoor sportsmen together, and he would do anything for that dog. Like, whatever it takes, let's do it. It's above all else, we have to get Goliath well, happy, healthy, and back doing his job on four legs again. I want my dog back. That was kind of what Mark kept saying to me. I just wanted my dog back, my buddy. So It ended up being rounds of all kinds of treatments that really sort of just kept failing, and the infection kept growing in this dog's leg. So Mark amped it up. He took him to universities that specialized in this sort of thing, and they ended up doing bone grafts because the infection got in the bone. And they kept telling him, you might have to take this leg off because it's spreading deeply inside of him and we're not really getting to it. But Mark was adamant, no, we're athletes. We are men who run together. That's how he identified himself with Goliath. So this went on until Goliath sort of stopped being able to really even get up. He was laying down so ill. The infection was spreading through his body. And Mark continued to try to heal the leg, spending, oh, thousands of dollars. He believed he was just being a good dog owner by doing all this. So we discussed this at one point, and the dog said to him, through me, in an appointment that he made with me, I don't mind if you cut it off. Because I asked Goliath how he felt about that. Mark said, absolutely not. I said, well, let's ask him. He said, oh, no, the dog was like, let's get it off now. So Mark was tortured. He felt like he was maiming his dear pet. But the dog said, no, you're not. I can't stand this anymore. I'm in agony, and I'll be fine. We'll go back to our old life again. Could you take my leg off, please? Torturous for poor Mark. But finally, he succumbed to this idea because it was what the doctors had been recommending for quite some time, and the dog seemed to be agreeing to it. Within a couple of weeks of this amputation surgery, the dog started to go running with Mark, learned completely how to use his life with three legs instead of four legs. And Mark noticed that it was Mark's belief that you couldn't run around the world as damaged goods. You only could be the best you could be. You had to be perfect and really excel at all things and use yourself fully. He realized later on the dog was completely relieved and happy and hardly noticed that he didn't have the other leg. He just it went back to life and stopped being ill, and his life was at that point in danger. In a few weeks, he was back running the trails with Mark, and Mark was marveling with me because he recognized in himself this pattern which had been pervasive in his life, where he felt like if he missed a day at the gym, then he was a big loser. If he didn't do everything he could do physically, he was doing nothing, and he was, in other words, he was putting too much of his own emphasis of his own life, the value of his life, and his ability to be physical. And Goliath showed him, no, not really. We want to carry on as best we can, and sometimes that's not perfect. Sometimes carrying on isn't always 100% pretty, but if we're carrying on, there's value there. I mean, those two had, I continued to talk to them, and they had, years of running on the trails together and activities. Couldn't go quite as far some days. They had to be a little careful when the footing was slippery. But Mark learned to maybe not muscle through everything in life, which was his pattern. He recognized the pattern, I muscle through everything. Instead, he decided, well, what if I don't have to muscle through everything? What if you just take each day as it comes, honor the part of you that isn't feeling perfectly, and move forward in a happy, relaxed way that isn't tension providing? And, he grew so much from understanding that about himself because it increased his compassion for other people who do that every day. And so this is just another kind of amazing tale of how once we start this process of observing our animals, we learn so much. Our animals can teach us things that we never anticipated learning because we never really saw that we needed to learn them. We never really see in ourselves sometimes what we're missing. He thought he was being an ultra athlete. Instead, he was kind of being judgmental about people that weren't ultra athletes or worked with diminished capacities. And he said, that isn't a very pretty thing to see about myself. And Goliath showed me that there's total nobility in taking what you've got, using it to the best of your abilities, and cherishing your life. So that was a big moment and a big, I don't know, healing for Mark for sure, which he continued to work on and think about, which changed a lot of things in how he made his decisions now. And so you can always ask yourself when you're thinking about these situations with your pet, am I just being stuck? Like, do I just want it to be a certain way? Is there stagnation in my feelings? Like, for instance, when people say to me, I always treat my animals the best, I always blank, fill in the blank. I always what? What do you always do? Do you always care for them better than yourself? Do I treat them better than family? Or I always stress over their happiness as a sign of showing them that I love them. So when you find yourself saying something like, when I think about my animals or when I care for my animals, I always, you should ask yourself, well, what is it you always do? And start to ask yourself, why do you do it? Is it for them or is it for you? Does it reflect your world view and the order that you think the world should be in? And what can it teach you about yourself if you got a little lighter about the topic and thought, what if I don't say I always do this or I always do that? Instead, you think, what do they want me to do? What are they trying to get me to do? What are they trying to show me? This is something I explore in my workshops, which if you're interested, if you go to laurarowleyhealer.com, I have a website where you can contact my assistant and she can either make an appointment to chat about a workshop or book a private appointment for you and your animal. The other thing I would appreciate is some Facebook feedback on Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. That's the name of my Facebook page, and it always teaches me a lot and helps me a lot when I have the opportunity to get feedback from anyone, positive or negative, that helps me design the show and helps me learn about my own patterns and helps me grow. So thank you for joining me. This is Laura Rowley and Animal Connections with Laura Rowley.
Animal Connections with Laura Rowley is an intuitive show created for you to learn what it's like to talk to animals. Laura shares 20 years of experiences of being a pet psychic and healer every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, media partner for the Omega Institute. Our beloved animals share our lives and have amazing insights into our well-being, providing us with opportunities for personal growth once we truly begin to listen. It's fun to use animal wisdom to enhance our emotional and spiritual world. Who better than our furry friends to teach us the wisdom born of unconditional love?
Quantum Jumps presents a radical new paradigm that we exist in an interconnected holographic multiverse in which we literally jump from one parallel universe to another. In a moment, you can become smarter, more confident, happier, more outgoing, more effective, in better relationships, with more willpower. When you sense a new connection to another possible you, living the life you'd prefer, immerse yourself naturally into that new state of being. And voila, you've made a quantum jump. Supported by scientific research, Quantum Jumps is an inspirational book backed with practical tools to help you live a happier, more prosperous life. Learn more at quantumjumps.com.
What if your dog, cat, or horse could help you with your love life? What would they suggest? It's fun to think about and a wonderful way to conduct yourself. After all, animals know well how to love and invite us to love them unconditionally. That's a pretty great way to live life. Animals always communicate with our highest good as their central focus, even when sometimes we feel stymied or frustrated with their behavior. Visit laurarowleyhealer.com to book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading. Laura's readings and workshops help you find the part of you that's able to tune in and connect to your amazing animals. Laura Rowley believes we can all understand by listening differently. Book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading now by going to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's L-A-U-R-A-R-O-W-L-E-Y healer.com.
Are you loving who you are, as you are, or are you stuck in old pain, fear, and anger? Philomena Tripp's inspirational book, Invisible Courage, shows us we all have infinite value. Discover how one courageous woman, born with severe birth defects, overcame immense challenges, creating a happy, nurturing, and successful life. Her first step was learning to love herself. Philomena's incredible journey exemplifies the resilience of the human spirit. Buy the book Invisible Courage by Philomena Tripp, available in paperback, Kindle, and now audiobook. Visit philomenatripp.com. That's philomenatripp.com.
Welcome back. I'm Laura Rowley, and you're listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen online or on your mobile devices. To learn more and for a full schedule, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is the media partner for Omega Institute. Thank you for listening today. We are discussing animals and the process that they invite in us, which allows for personal growth. And it is a process. So I have some stories that illuminate this idea. So I'm hoping that they will stimulate you to ponder some of your own processes that are probably going on right underneath your nose in your house with your animals or your horse in the barn or your pet cow that teach you something about yourself when you notice patterns that emerge. I recently had a lovely appointment with a woman who said she just didn't know how she was going to continue to live with a very large dog that they got about a year ago. The dog weighed 138 pounds, and when she'd grown up now, and it had become her husband's favorite animal, pet, companion, cherished her husband. So she was glad that she and her husband had bonded, the dog had bonded with her husband, but the dog was acting strange towards her. So when she would, for instance, go to the refrigerator, the dog would stand in front of the refrigerator, all 138 pounds of her, and not get out of the way, so she couldn't open the door without kind of, you know, she'd call the dog wouldn't come, she'd have to kind of push the dog away. She'd get whatever she needed out of the refrigerator, turn around to walk back to the other part of her house, and the dog would be standing in the doorway. She'd have to kind of go, "Would you move, please?" You know, and the dog would just sort of look at her like, maybe, and would look her straight in the eye. And the dog's name, by the way, was Amelia, which was funny. And Amelia would look her in the eye and say, "No, I really don't want to move, and I'm inviting you to figure out how you can make me move." It was almost like a playful look she gave her. And so the woman, whose name was Mary, said to me, "I think she's trying to tell me something, but it's really annoying. I mean, I can hardly get anything done when this dog isn't standing in front of me making me move her. I don't want to push her around. I'm not young. Why can't she just move? What's going on?" So we got chatting, Amelia and I, about her relationship with Mary in the house. And so when you're an animal communicator, all animal communicators, I think, work a little differently. But what happens to me a lot of times is I see almost in my mind's eye, almost like a little video that starts to play. So the video that I saw showed Mary with a pile of cats on her, lots of cats. So I happened to know, actually, Mary from before. We had talked about some of these cats whenever she went to select them. She called me to get my advice or help with them. And I said to Mary, "You know, the dog is showing me the cats." And she said, "Well, the cats are all fine. I want to know what's going on with the dog and me." So the next thing I saw was the idea that perhaps her husband was disappointed and angry. That was a little movie I saw. The man was looking down, and he looked distressed. And then suddenly I saw, kind of in this download that happens, the whole connective piece to that. It turns out that the dog felt that Mary's husband was being neglected because Mary paid more attention to the cats than to the husband. So I told Mary that, which is always hard for me to just unedit anything I say, be completely honest and tell her what I see. And I said, "You know, I think that your husband is distressed about all the cats in the house." Well, Mary laughed and said, "Yes, he is. He asked me after I had one or two to please stop getting them because he traveled a lot for work. He came home and he wanted to be able to maybe go on weekends on jaunts or go on little weekend retreats with her. Now that he was retired, they couldn't go anywhere because they had a house full of cats that all had particular needs and requirements. And Mary said, I always make sure my animals are taken care of as if I were there, and nobody can do this as well as I do. So I just tell my husband, I'm sorry, but we can't travel. So I knew just what the dog was talking about, what Amelia was trying to tell her. So the dog said, I'm imitating her. I said, I get it. So I explained to Mary what the dog was showing her about Mary's own life. And that was that Mary was sort of blocking what her husband wanted to do. If he wanted to go be a retiree or have weekends away, she said, no, I can't do it because I have too many pets. I always take care of my own pets. I never have a pet sitter at my house. So there's that always thing where you always do a certain thing. There's your pattern, right? And I said, well, you're kind of blocking what your husband wants to do with his life, which would be to hang out with you once in a while. And not with all the animals. He wants to travel. He wants freedom. He's worked his whole life. So the dog said, I'm protecting him by showing Mary what it looks like where everywhere you try to go, someone blocks your intention. So I stand in front of her to let her see, what does this feel like to you? If you want to go to the refrigerator, I'm telling you, no, you can't go. Do you want to walk through these doors? I'm telling you, see how this feels, how frustrating it is to live with someone that doesn't let you do what you want to do. And Mary was crying because she said, that is what I am doing to my husband. I am blocking what he wants all the time. So, of course, I said to her, this is not my affair to discuss with you, but it seems to me like if you want to talk about this, of course I'll process whatever bit I can, but why don't you start talking to your husband about this? You know, why don't you ask yourself why you're blocking him. You know, why don't you go on a vacation with him or a weekend retreat? Or why is it you can't trust anyone to take care of your animals as well as you do, only for a 24-hour or 46-hour or whatever period? Why don't you start small and give it a whirl? Why don't you look at your pattern and think to yourself, well, what if I change this about myself? You know, would you be, you know, I asked the dog, Amelia, I said, Amelia, if she changed this, would you stop the behavior that you're doing? In fact, now that we've brought this to light, the cause of your behavior, it would be great if you kind of stopped it now because, you know, Mary needs to think about what she wants to do about her marriage, needs to talk to her husband, and needs to clear up some stuff. Somehow she'd gotten in a habit of putting her animals in, over her husband. And that really upset Mary when she saw that. Even though she laughed about it almost on a daily basis, I always take better care of my animals than my husband. He can wait to go on trips, she'd joke. But really, it wasn't all that funny to her husband. It kind of was a bummer. And now that he retired, he definitely was looking to embrace life with her, which, of course, is something that must be honored and sorted out. And the dog said, I am his protector, and I just wanted her to see what that looks like for her. So I thanked Amelia and asked her to please stop, which she said, I will. And so Mary started to look at the idea that if we're all free to do whatever we want, we can choose to do what we want, and we don't need to let our animals stop us. In fact, they're all for it because they want us to be happy. And so she realized that she had some work to do, and she was pretty, I don't know, blown away with what the dog showed her. And distraught and needed to process. And so we kind of concluded the appointment right there. And I'll be eager to hear later on how Amelia sorted herself out in terms of being a good companion to them. This happens in so many different kinds of examples where we see something serious about ourselves when we wonder about what our animal is doing. I spoke to a rider who competes at the highest levels as a junior rider in this country, which takes hours and hours of practice every day. And it's very hard work. And this woman and her husband bought their daughter a lovely horse and said, you're so dedicated. Why don't we all do this as a family together? We'll take you to the shows. We'll watch you do this athletic thing. It'll be a lovely opportunity to be together as a family, as well as you can develop your own skills. So she got to the top of her sport. She was great at it. So they bought her this really amazing horse that had done the same thing with other young ladies. And so they they said, let's do this. Let's get this great horse. So the horse, they called him Puff. I don't know what his show name was. It was probably a lot more dignified than Puff. So they bought Puff, and he was the top horse of the year before. They thought, let's just do this together. So off they go. They'd go to shows. They'd do fantastic. They qualified for the finals. And then just when everything looked like they were going to clinch it, or they were one of the top five horses in the country, Puff would do something weird. Like, for instance, he would go in front of the judge and sort of stop almost and look at the judge bizarrely. Like, you don't do that. That would be like watching a runway model walking down the runway at New York City, strutting her stuff, and then suddenly stopping and making a goofy face and sticking her tongue out at the people that were around her. Like, you just don't do that. So Puff started to do all these antics that were inappropriate, unprofessional, and had nothing to do with his other performances, which was he was a jumper. He could jump really well. And so it got to be a thing where this little girl, Emily, said, I'm just going to train harder. So I must need to tire him out more. He's doing the stupidest stuff, and he's not obeying me. And yet he'll be completely perfect until it's a super important competition, and then he'll do this one thing that disqualifies us or, you know, knocks us out anyway. He might buck or just something random. So she decided to train harder. In the meanwhile, she phoned me, was waiting for an appointment with me, been training, and Puff had started to really just get unhappy looking. He actually wasn't even performing all that well now in between his antics. So when we spoke, he said to me, she's no fun, and I'm showing her what that looks like. She needs to see what fun is. She needs to laugh at herself, and she needs to find why she's doing this and whether or not it's fun. He knew as a show horse that when he did his job perfectly, he totally knew what that looked like. I asked him, I said, do you know what you're supposed to do? And he said, of course I know what I'm supposed to do. But it's more fun when I get everybody to laugh, because people started to expect him to do odd things, and it embarrassed Emily. But people were going to watch her classes because she was so perfect until they were awful. And so he said, I am embarrassing her, yes, because I want her to see that putting too much into this. She thinks her whole identity has to do with whether or not she does this one thing perfectly. And I want to show her that it also can be fun, and that sometimes when you're expressive and you're fun and you're being yourself while you're doing something, well, you paint a better picture. You look happier. Other people want to meet you in the middle. Judges think you're good at what you do because you kind of, well, you glow. You know, from the inside out when you're doing a practice with passion and with love and excitement. And he said, she stopped glowing. She just thinks it's about hard work. And I don't really want to do this with her anymore if she doesn't really, you know, want to participate that way. So, of course, that made Emily sad, because at first she just thought she was applying herself to the task. But she was at an age in her life, in her early 20s, when I think maybe you start to learn that if something is no fun, then you probably just don't need to work harder at it. Either decide you want to do it for the joy of it, or decide that you want to maybe get out of it and do something else that does make you joyful. So she had some thinking to do. You know, did she want to sell Puff and maybe change it up? Because she said she was a nervous wreck and her stomach hurt all the time, and she had ulcers that year. She was a wreck. And I said, well, don't do your life as a wreck. Do your life with joy. That's all this lovely creature Puff is trying to show you. And so she laughed, and she said, well, I'm going to have to think about this. She was going to decide. She loved Puff dearly. And she was deciding, as we spoke in that very moment, that she needed to change her attitude, and asked me to ask Puff if he could forgive her for making it be a drag. And he said, of course I can. You know, yes, I'll forgive her. And whenever we have forgiveness, of course, we have healing. We have healing. We have growth. Whenever we have growth, we just learn something. So they did, and they'll figure it out. I know they will. At least she saw the pattern and could identify it. I appreciate you listening. This is Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
What if your dog, cat, or horse could help you with your love life? What would they suggest? It's fun to think about and a wonderful way to conduct yourself. After all, animals know well how to love and invite us to love them unconditionally. That's a pretty great way to live life. Animals always communicate with our highest good as their central focus, even when sometimes we feel stymied or frustrated with their behavior. Visit laurarowleyhealer.com to book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading. Laura's readings and workshops help you find the part of you that's able to tune in and connect to your amazing animals. Laura Rowley believes we can all understand by listening differently. Book a workshop or private long-distance phone reading now by going to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's L-A-U-R-A-R-O-W-L-E-Y healer.com.
Discover how you can transform your life on both a physical and spiritual level in the Healing Through Transformation Workshop with near-death survivor Anita Morjani. Discover Anita's step-by-step process to develop your own self-worth and learn to lead a happier, healthier life. Mention discount code DREAM for 20% off when you register for Healing Through Transformation with Anita Morjani, October 20th to 25th at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. Learn more at eomega.org.
Do you sometimes feel like your life is a series of problems to be solved rather than an adventure to open to? Do your challenges often bring up fear, worry, anxiety, and confusion rather than empowering you to your core? Explore powerful tools and techniques offered by Mary O'Malley in her new book, What's in the Way is the Way, and experience ease, peace, joy, and a deep trust in this amazing adventure called life. To find out more about what Mary offers, visit her website at maryomalley.com.
Are you searching for a way to help create global change? Dream Vision 7 Radio Network's vision is to have an eclectic group of radio hosts dedicated to educating, enlightening, and helping humankind with positive messages and tools that enhance lives using different modalities and programs. If you would like to join our team and help illuminate the universe, call Deborah at 508-226-1723 or Deborah at dreamvision7radio.com.
Animal Connections with Laura Rowley is an intuitive show created for you to learn what it's like to talk to animals. Laura shares 20 years of experiences of being a pet psychic and healer every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, media partner for the Omega Institute. Our beloved animals share our lives and have amazing insights into our well-being, providing us with opportunities for personal growth once we truly begin to listen. It's fun to use animal wisdom to enhance our emotional and spiritual world. Who better than our furry friends to teach us the wisdom born of unconditional love?
Welcome back. This is Laura Rowley and Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. I am a facilitator of workshops, and in these workshops, I help people identify some of these patterns in themselves, and I also just sort of teach them to trust their intuition and how that looks and how simple it is, and yet sometimes how kind of elusive it is, because we don't train ourselves in our daily lives, really, to trust our intuition. We always seem to think we need scientific backup for everything. And I think that there are a lot of reasons for that, one of which is in our culture, we always feel like we have to prove things scientifically. Because if we prove things scientifically, then we can say, oh, this happened once, it'll happen again exactly the same way. It's how what we learn to in school. We learn that, you know, it's testable if we can prove these things too. If 1 + 1 = 2 today, it will not equal 3 tomorrow. So it teaches us to become, well, civilized and to learn the rules of nature and physics, which is, of course, wonderful to be able to participate that way. But there's another richer way that our right brain or our intuitive brain likes to function by anticipating the joy that will be held if we do things a certain way, or the fun that can be had, or the deep meaning that can happen when we love something unconditionally. That isn't something we necessarily in our culture in this country, in the United States, necessarily stop and pause and pay attention to as much as maybe we could. But when we have an animal in our life, whatever the animal is, any kind of animal in our lives, they open a door for us that kind of leads us there if we listen. So my workshops often teach people about that, how to do that. They're fun. They can be held in barns. They can be held in people's homes. They can be held in stadiums, whatever anybody wants to do. So in this one particular case, it was held in a barn, and we were in an indoor riding arena. And there were a group of us, maybe 20 people, 25 people. It was in Maine. We were in a big circle, and we were connecting deeply to this lovely, shaggy, beautiful little black and white pony. He had long white feathers on his feet. He was beautiful. And the owner brought him in and had him outside of our little ring. So I was instructing people to go through the motions that I always do to help you open your heart and open the right side of your brain to try to connect with animals so that they could learn perhaps to be intuitive like I am. You know, feel the animal's feelings, think the thoughts of the animals. In other words, start to learn to trust that part of yourself. So I always have these series of exercises that I do, which help people really focus on the animal so that we can maybe catch his feelings or his thoughts. So I was running people through the feelings, and we're sitting in our little chairs in a tight circle because I prefer to work in a circle. I think it's helpful for people. And we're all really focusing, and the energy inside the circle started to get really sort of strained. I could feel that some of the participants in the workshop were starting to worry if they could do what I was doing. Would they get a feeling for the animal? What if they didn't get a feeling for the animal? Then they would be maybe considered unsuccessful as an attendee in the workshop. And maybe they'd always dreamed of being able to talk to animals, so maybe they really weren't going to be able to do this. And this was stupid that they were even here. And I could feel everybody's thoughts churning along those lines. They were definitely trying a little too hard. So I reminded them that everyone has a right-sided brain, an intuitive aspect of themselves, and if they could just trust it, if they could just pause for a moment and trust themselves, relax, take a deep breath, and refocus again if you find that you're not feeling anything or hearing anything from the animal. And this takes a little practice. So I let them do the steps again. Again, everybody seemed tense and kind of upset. It was the first day of the workshop. They were trying to be successful immediately. And I make it look kind of easy because I do it for, well, I've done it for 22 years. And I do it for hours and hours and hours a week. And anything you practice it, you get good at. So I remind them that just take your time. If you just get little tiny segments of it today, that will be a beginning. And once you find the beginning, it's like pulling a thread. And you can start to pull it harder and harder until you start to realize, oh, I've got something going here. So the pony finally just started to drag its handler, who was its owner, into the center of the circle, which is not really a good idea to have a pony in the middle of the circle because, you know, he could kick out, hit a fly, and hit a person by mistake. So I said to everybody, well, make our circle bigger. So the pony insisted on coming into the middle of the circle, which was kind of funny. And then he walked over to the person opposite of me, and he like kind of pushed on her knee and was nuzzling her with this adorable look on her face. Then he walked to the person next to her, kind of grabbed, it was a chilly morning, and grabbed her hat that she was wearing and started to try to take it off her hat. Of course, we were letting him do this. We could have stopped it if we wanted, but we could see he was trying to tell us something. So I said to everybody, this is a message. Just be quiet and watch what he does for a moment. So he ended up working his way all the way around the circle. I took him out of the middle of the circle and we put him on the outside of the circle because it's just safer horsemanship. So from the back of the circle, he went around and kind of harassed everyone on the circle. He'd pull on a shoulder. He'd grab some hair. He'd take his little cute lips and nuzzle the back of somebody's neck like, whoa, I'm bugging you. And he got everybody giggling because it was so adorable. And he was really a cute pony too. And he knew it. And he, you know, his eyes were all charming and black. Like, I'm harassing you. This is so much fun. And then he'd go to the next person and he worked his way all the way around. So he was telling everybody what? Lighten up. Have some fun. Change how you're doing this. So I took my cue as the facilitator and said, okay, so I'm your teacher. I'm supposed to remind you to have a little more fun. Let's get a little silly here because when we're happy and we're joyful when we're doing something in life, anything in life, our vibration goes up. And when our vibration goes up, it's easier for us to be more intuitive. So they were all laughing. And of course, immediately people started to get hits and started to shout out, which I encourage in my workshops. Tell me anything you think he's feeling or seeing. Tell me any ideas you're getting. And one woman said to me, I think his legs itch. My legs, and I said, you do? And she goes, yeah, my own legs are tingling oddly. And the lady across from her said, you know what? I was discounting that. She said, my legs don't itch. But she said, I thought he was saying his legs itched. And because he had these beautiful long white feathers, you know, like a Clydesdale kind of horse. He was some sort of cross with a draft horse. So he had that hallmark of these beautiful white legs. So then everybody started to say, you know, I'm itchy, actually. So people were starting to experience through empathy what the pony had going on. So then, if he could have made it any clearer, he puts his head down and he starts to take his teeth and he's itching his legs with his teeth and then itching the other legs with his teeth. So I said to the woman that had brought him there, her name is Martha, and I said, Martha, why did you bring what's going on with the pony? She said, well, I didn't want to say anything to anybody because she didn't want anybody to get any hints. But she said, I was bringing him to you because she said, nobody can figure out why his legs itch so much. He itches them constantly. So there it was. Everyone got the hit, recognized it, and were like kind of relieved and really thought it was cool and fun. And then we had some work to do to figure out why his legs itched, which we ended up doing in conjunction with the veterinarian that had the case. And we figured out that he had a rare form of some sort of yeast infection, and probably in the hair follicles of his legs, that had happened because it was a particularly damp and wet year and enough air didn't get there. And unfortunately, we had to shave all those pretty feathers off to get more air and light to his legs. So we did solve the problem. His legs, a couple weeks later, did stop itching. We had another appointment on the phone, which I do long-distance appointments on the phone. So we had a chat with him, and he had stopped itching and was fine. But the really cool thing is that he taught all of us, including myself as a teacher. Maybe I was trying to teach too hard. You know, maybe I was too worried they wouldn't be successful because then I'd be worried that I wasn't successful. You know, maybe I needed to lighten up too because he certainly harassed me too when he walked around the back of me. You know, kind of tickling us almost with his lips. And so I got to learn. I always learn whenever I facilitate a workshop so much about myself as a teacher, as a person. I learn my own expectations of what I want as a result. I want to, of course, be successful. I want everyone to have fun, and I start to feel responsible for their fun, which is a dangerous thing to do when you're a facilitator, because everyone has to stay in their own process, and it's my job to sort of ground them and inspire them and comfort them, but not feel responsible for their process because that's their process. So I learned a lot, and they all, of course, had the wonderful experience of actually feeling the itch themselves and understanding what it was about, which is very cool when you realize that, oh, I just got confirmation of something I was hoping to learn about, which was animal communication. In this case, it was a animal communication workshop. And so I feel like I benefit from the wisdom of so many different beings, people and animals coming to my sessions and to my phone calls, and I learn every time about my own patterns. And one thing you always have to be careful of whenever you do anything, like the young lady Emily with the horse or myself as the facilitator in the workshops, is you have to be careful to not get too caught up in competing with yourself or competing for perfect outcomes, or, you know, always thinking it's only about the blue ribbon of life, right? It's important that we process anything we do in life with a certain amount of wonderment, joy, fascination at the outcome. You know, did we learn something by failing? So lots of times, repetitive behaviors with your animal will sort of show you continual failures so that you can almost get used to the idea that it isn't wrong or bad to fail. It's because you're trying, you're growing. If we always set out to try a new thing and we're always guaranteed success, well, why bother? Why not? It's challenging and interesting to try. So that's a major theme in my workshops that I always work on. And I worked with this one woman who had a lovely, her name is Nancy, and she has a really lovely show horse. And she prides herself on being a very accurate, careful woman in how this horse is handled, maintained, kind of with perfection. And she does that thing that I was telling you earlier. She'll say, I always do everything exactly perfectly for this horse. So whenever I hear that, I think, here comes a pattern that's going to show up. So it turns out the horse was a highly successful show horse, and he stopped being able to turn his neck from the left to the right. He stopped being able to move his neck. So they'd had chiropractors, acupuncturists, veterinarians, all kinds of people trying to alter that. And so she hired me on the phone, and I could see the horse couldn't move his neck. That was the first thing he told me. She told me that's why she was hiring me. So I said, okay, let's get down to it. What's the problem here? So she had become so stiff and rigid, she wouldn't look at anything other than her program. I do everything perfectly. She had charts for her grooms to look at so that they did the horse exactly that, like she thought they should be done. His every life, trot him for 10 minutes, walk him for 12 minutes, trot him for another 8 minutes. She had everything really regimented. She was being stiff. And so the horse said to me, this energy is so pervasive in her life that it's actually starting to affect me, and I am growing stiff. So that's an odd idea, isn't it? It's kind of a metaphor energetically. It's the vibe that was in her barn. It was in her life. When I explained it to her, she said, well, that's exactly how I do things. I always do it that way. And I said, well, this is what it looks like when you separate your heart from your head. You can't really use your neck well. So it turns out she was under a chiropractor's care for stiffness in her neck, which related to an issue she was having with her ability to be flexible in her thinking about how life is in her fifth chakra, which is, of course, a huge topic and a bigger topic than we can cover in the next few minutes. But she had the big aha, and she said, oh, I get this. I have to lighten up, don't I? I said, you do. That's the pattern. And it's almost the pattern for all of us. Don't take yourself so seriously. Don't always do things a certain way and then get on your high horse about it, no pun intended. Instead, realize that sometimes there's total joy in letting go of a pattern because it's not really helping you. It's not really serving you. And I thank you so much for listening to me today, and I hope you can think about your own patterns and where you can grow, and I hope your animals help you do that happily and successfully. And thanks for listening to Animal Connections with Laura Rowley on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Thank you for joining Animal Connections with Laura Rowley. Heard every Friday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Join Laura next time to discover how you can embrace the wisdom flowing from your loved animals. Communication starts with an intention to understand. Each week, Laura helps you find your own unique ability to create a better understanding of yourself as taught through the loving eyes of your animals. To connect with Laura Rowley, go to laurarowleyhealer.com. That's LaurarowleyHealer.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.